Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hi there, my name is John Paul Kermy. I am a breathwork teacher. I train people on how to teach breathwork as well. I'm really excited to be doing this new podcast with my good friend Feldy called Hangups, where we're going to help you change your life. We're going to show you how to transform your life with different tools.
That's right. I'm John Feldman. I'm in a band called Goldfinger. John Paul taught me breathwork. It changed my life. I have struggled with anxiety and depression throughout my life, and I've gotten through it. This is a solution-based show. We're talking about solutions to problems today. Yeah. Hello, everybody. My name is John Feldman. I am the lead singer of the band Goldfinger. And this is my co-host, John Paul Kermy. Hi, John Paul.
Hey,
he's a breathwork teacher, among many other things. And this is my good friend over here, Glenn Holmes, who is
also
my
known as John Feldman.
Oh, yeah. On your screen, it says my name. He also is part of Box and Burn Academy, which is the biggest boxing fitness gym in the world, right?
Box and Burn, there's two gyms in LA, yeah. One of the first boxing fitness gyms. Since then, we have an academy as well, which is like a certification course for personal training. So I guess the world's first online boxing fitness certification, you could call it.
Glenn Holmes, the most handsome man in my lounge. And my good friend underneath me here, Josh Dunn, the drummer of 21 Pilots and has the best hair on this phone call without a shadow of a doubt.
I don't know.
Pretty sure I know about on the hair.
It's great to be here.
Where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles. I traveled for a little bit. It's a crazy time to travel. It's also interesting to see what other states are doing and the temperature of the pandemic is around the country. And it's different in each state.
Are you in your studio right now?
Yes, I am. And I got some espresso just in honor of you.
I brought caffeine into proceedings as well.
Perfect. I've got watermelon Red Bull, dude. So I was just thinking about the first time I met you, Josh. I mean, it was years ago now, right?
2013, 2014, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, my guess is it was probably six years ago. My friend, Caleb, who's from Columbus, Ohio, who also is the guy that coined the term Calabasas instead of Calabasas, because that's how we pronounced our name, Caleb from Beartooth. He was like, I just wrote with this guy, this local kid named Tyler, and I think he's an amazing songwriter, and I think you should write a song with him. I forget, what was the name of the song that we were working on? It was like an early...
There was something to do with like Thai tea. I think you like introduced Tyler to his first Thai tea.
Where did I see you? You had your warm-up routine. What was it back then?
Yeah. Well, we've been doing that. We've been doing the putting drums on, just basically a piece of plywood for longer than probably people realize. Yeah, you came all the way out to Cleveland. I remember it was winter. Yeah, I mean, that was a tiny, tiny club, probably like 200 people. I'm thankful for those kind of like beginning days where we were able to kind of just work stuff out and see if some of these like stunts would work. If they would work in a place like that, then there's a good chance that they would work in a larger setting, which was kind of, that was our goal, to get bigger, play in front of more people. And yeah, that was probably one of the craziest times of our lives. A lot going on. And it was scary because we were two guys from Columbus, Ohio, who didn't know really anything about the music industry, but we knew that we liked playing shows and writing music. And man, you've been supportive ever since. And so I thank you for that. And thanks for getting me into boxing and into breath work. So
it's all full circle. And I was just thinking too, like you, I know when you were growing up, you were a fan of Blink 182. I mean, I've known you longer than I've known Glenn. I mean, I met Glenn through Travis. Glenn was training Travis at the time. And so during that album, we would train with Skiba, Hoppus, and Travis, like all kind of different times because they all had different schedules. But it was just so crazy kind of how I met Glenn. And then we immediately bonded over music, you know, over Bad Religion, over Rancid and all these bands. And I think, did you used to tour manage Mest, one of my bands back in the day or something?
It was Chris Shaw. I went on the road with them, just like roading for them throughout the Midwest. And we just talked a lot about like Show Off and you like finding them and recording and producing them and all that kind of stuff. And I was a huge Mess fan, obviously a big Goldfinger fan and all that. But it was interesting when we first met at the gym and we boxed, it was like kind of the common bond. I was like, oh yeah, I went out on tour with Chris. And you were like, what? That was like really weird, like kind of story. But
Chris used to have to wear a girdle on stage because he had a bad back. So it would have been great for you. I don't know if you were training. You weren't training back then, were you?
I was like still about a good 5-6 years away from like being in fitness as a profession, yeah.
And how did you transition from tour managing bands?
I never tour managed bands. Don't make me sound more glamorous.
what were you doing with Chris? Just helping him out?
I just wanted to just do something like related to music. Yeah, like all my friends had gone to university in England. I was like not interested in it. I just wanted to come to California and be involved with music in some way. I interned at Warner Brothers, like American Idiot came out and Avenged Sevenfold were huge. And that whole time period, I was interning at Warner Brothers then. I got a job at a marketing agency in Hollywood and I was just doing that. That was like my job, working for like, some majors hired them and they gave us like all their really low priority projects. So I was just sat in an office all day doing digital marketing for records that I just did not care about. And then it just kind of switched. Like, I was like, I don't want to be in an office doing 9 to 5 anymore. I want to, you know, be active. I want to be out and about running and all that kind of stuff. So I just, yeah, my passions just totally switched and fitness and boxing just completely took over. Didn't really think I was going to have a career doing that. Until I met Tony Jeffries, the owner of Box and Burn. He kind of encouraged me to pick up the training side and hold mitts and train people. And I started building up clientele that way and teaching group classes and just kind of learning on the job, really. Just absolutely loved it. Didn't want to do anything else. So since then, it's all I've really done. I remember I was training Travis a lot then. I just remember one day at the gym, we were doing a lap around the gym to warm up. And he's like, oh, I should bring Feldy in. He'd love this. I remember the first time you walked into the gym and I was like going to wrap your hands, whatever. I was like, have you done any boxing before? And you're like, the first thing you said was, I've never had a fight. I've never been punched and I've never punched anybody. And I was like, it's all right. We're not going to be punching anyone. Don't worry about it.
I had idea what to expect, man. I was like going into this thing.
That's what a lot of people who come to the gym, they're like, I'm going to do boxing. Like, what am I going to be doing? I'm going to be getting punched. And it's like, we had to try and create this like middle thing where it was like legitimate training, but where you're learning like a new skill, but it's not like you're getting punched and it's not kind of just, you know, gimmicky cardio. It's like real training. So that's kind of how we like got really popular pretty quick, was being able to fuse the two.
I forget the first time that we all trained together. I invited you in, right, Josh? I'm like, I think you'd like this. I just remember thinking like, you're just such a fit. You've always seemed like a fitness guy to me.
Well, I haven't always been a fitness guy. And I think that when we started touring, I kind of had the mentality that I like wanted to like save my energy for the show. And so I just wouldn't do anything at all. Like I would just kind of like sit around all the time, just waiting to play. But then my sort of introduction was I started feeling more and more anxiety in my life. And I think that's when I started running, then also found that subsequently helped with playing drums and the performance. And I just felt better. I felt better mentally, but also physically, and realized at a pretty young age that I definitely needed to add something into my routine if I wanted to be able to play drums the way that I enjoy playing drums for a long time. So it began with running, and that was a really therapeutic and life-changing thing. Maybe I had been running for like a year and then you hit me up and asked me to come box. And I think I had tried boxing like once or twice. So I think that the few times that I went, it just kind of felt discouraging. I think getting into it with a friend and somebody like you, who, by the way, I feel like you have something about you to where you're just like, come and do this thing. And most people are like, all right, I've never done it, but I'll try it. I'm in. The first time training, I feel like Glenn just had a really great way of kind of easing into boxing. You know, because also I think the idea of starting boxing is like, it just sounds fun. That can be the tricky thing too, is realizing that there's a lot of things that you need to kind of like discuss or go over before you can just kind of like get in the ring with somebody or just start hitting mitts. And that was one thing that I really admired about the beginning days of starting to train with you, Glenn, is how you were really patient, but also kind of allowed both John and I to just have fun right off the bat. And then, you know, 4 or so years later, I think we're still dialing in some of the technique and the fundamentals and getting that stuff better. And it's kind of just a never ending quest to be a better boxer. That was something that I loved. I felt like it was just it was cathartic in kind of in very similar ways to how drumming is. I really started to love it. And then, you know, we kind of just started doing it twice a week or more, depending on how we felt. And that's never been something that I've not wanted in my kind of weekly routine.
Speaking of not punching anybody in the head, remember the first time I accidentally punched you in the head? We were in my studio and I slid off your shoulder and I got your chin and I knocked the hat off your head. I still feel bad for that. I love you. I'm so sorry.
I love how you got the first time I punched you in the head. We were in my studio.
Yeah.
Not like in the gym or
boxing.
Yeah, we're in the studio.
Yeah.
You got me back though. Remember that one time you got me in the nose, and I was that one time you gave me a bloody nose. That was great. Yeah. I love that.
Josh, one of the things that you touched on when you were just talking, I thought was amazing. That was one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast with Feldy, where you said, you know, I was feeling a lot of anxiety and I started to run. The reason that one of the reasons we're doing this is to normalize that kind of thing, where everybody's struggling with anxiety and depression and stress and all this different stuff out there, but nobody's talking about it, you know? And I feel like if we talked about it a little more, like, you know what, I was feeling anxiety and I started to box, I started to run, I started to do breath work, whatever, we would give people tools out there to use, because we're all, you know, we all suffer from something. We all struggle with something, you know? So I love that you said that you shared that. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, and I think that John kind of unknowingly introduced me to two really big things that course corrected my relationship with anxiety. I think that breath work is so much more powerful than I realized going into it, because I think even when things started to kind of like ramp up a little bit more with anxiety, if you do even just a little bit of light research, people will just kind of recommend like taking deep breaths or just being mindful of your breathing, and that can kind of de-escalate a little bit. Getting introduced to your practices was something that I'd never experienced before. I like very vividly remember laying on Feldy's living room floor with like 4 other dudes going through your, I think it was like the medium length version of your breath work. And the way that John set it up, I was just like, what am I in for? But again, the way that he does things, I'm kind of just like, all right, I'm down.
And
if you can kind of open yourself to that that sort of journey, that is literally just inhaling and exhaling in a specific way, it can be life-changing. So I think it's really powerful and really important, and something that I continue to do.
It's hard to understand that, like, something you've been doing your entire life, breathing, you can lay on the floor and do it in a different way, in a way that somebody's never shown you before, and it's going to have all these incredible effects on you, right? And the first time I did it, I went, how is this, how have I not known about this? Like, why didn't somebody show this to me when I was 14 and I was suicidal or miserable, you know? So
what was it like for you, Glenn, first time we did it?
Like really, really surreal. I remember you sent me John's stuff on iTunes. I was really surprised by how difficult it was, like how much concentration was required. And there's no kind of like, oh, I can't like drift off and think about this. All I have to think about is like breathing. And you, like you said, something you've done all your life without thinking about it. And then all of a sudden you've got to zone in on it and stay with it for like 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is. Just concentrate on that one thing. And it's similar. I was going to say it's kind of similar to boxing. Like when you're just in it, you're concentrating on that one thing. That's it. And then it's the same with like the breath work and the meditation. You're concentrating on that one thing, and it's when you've been concentrating on one thing that you know is good for you on a physical level for like a good 20 minutes, 30 minutes, however long it is. When you come out of that, you just feel amazing because you're like, I was just zoned into something that like made me feel great.
Every time I try and describe this to somebody when they come in, I'm like, yeah, you're gonna, you know, one breath in your stomach and one breath, you know, just kind of describing the two breath process. And then your hands are going to maybe turn into lobster claws and your mouth is going to like peek out. People start freaking. They're like, what the fuck are you putting in my water? Like, what am I going to have? That's going to be like, you know, and you're definitely going to cry. If you don't cry, there's something wrong with you. I don't say that, but I'm like, and you know what? Most people do cry. And it's like, I've written some of the best songs after breathwork sessions. I think, I mean, Josh, you and I have written a bunch with other artists, and we've done breathwork a lot before songwriting sessions, right?
Yeah, it definitely, I will say that's a good point too. I think, the crying thing, it really can take you to kind of a different mental and emotional place. And of course I've cried multiple times during the thing, which is why I want you to explain it a little bit. Cause to people and like, you know, why that happens.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the first time I did it was the most powerful experience I've ever had in my life. I mean, I released just years and years of stuff, and when you breathe this way, you're breathing in your sympathetic nervous system, right? So when you breathe through your nose, it's parasympathetic. That's rest and digest. When you breathe through your mouth, it's sympathetic. It's fight or flight. So you're breathing into your fight or flight nervous system. And I personally believe, there's no science to back this up yet. They're working on it. I personally believe that that's where all the trauma is stored. That's where all the stuff that's happened to us in our lives. And you might be like, well, I didn't have anything happen to me. Well, that doesn't matter because trauma is passed on through generations now. Science has proven that. There have been studies that they've done that have proven that your parents' trauma is literally passed on to you and their parents' trauma is passed on. And I mean, there's crazy stuff that I could talk about where they shock a mouse and they spray cherry blossom spray and then they keep shocking it and spraying the spray. And then they do that to the generations, 15 generations later, they just spray the cherry blossom spray and that mouse has a reaction from that other mice don't have, which is incredible. So they know, they know that mothers that were pregnant at 9/11, the babies were born with higher cortisol levels than other babies that were born at that time. So trauma is passed on generational. So you don't have to cry. Not everybody cries when they do it, but a lot of times it's this big emotional release. I had like, I don't know, 30 years, 35 years of stuff that was just built up inside of me. And I cried like I've never cried before. The first couple months I did it, I cried a lot. And I just let all this stuff out. And people were like, man, you seem different. Like, what's going on with you? I didn't even want to tell people what was going on with me. I was like embarrassed about it, you know, because I was a trainer. I was a personal trainer at the time in Gold's Gym in Venice, California, the mecca of like ego and bodybuilding. I'm from Boston originally, you know, like tough guys don't cry and, you know, you don't let people know. And now it's like, now I've studied so much that when people tell me like, oh, it's the first time I've cried in 3 years, I'm like, dude, you're going to make yourself sick. That's like saying that's the first time I've gone to the bathroom in 3 years. What are you, crazy? Like crying is a necessary emotion. You are supposed to cry. You are supposed, and not only that, but there's a chemical that's released in your body that actually strengthens your immune system when you cry. So it's actually really good for you to cry. And so there's a reason we cry. We have everything our body does is a reason for it. You know, there's, it's not just by mistake. It's not just like, you know, there's this incredible design of the human body and the liver detoxifies everything. But crying is just this weird thing that happens by accident because you're a wuss. You know what I mean? Like that's not how it works. It's like laying on the floor, doing this thing, just breathing, the focus of it, the focus on one thing, one task is shuts your mind down. It's a thing called transient hyperfrontality. And it literally can shut off part of your frontal lobe, which is the ego part of your lobe, which is a critic that we all have. And I love breathwork because it shuts it off for me. And I've seen it do it for a lot of people. And Feldy was like my first experiment. Like he was the first guy I did it on. And it was great. It was great to be able to take him through that.
You know, it is a funny thing, crying. Like I was watching Star Wars the other day and, you know, at the end of the movie when everyone, you know, from all these different walks of life in the universe, they all get their awards, like, you know, Chewbacca and Han Solo and Luke Skywalker get awarded from Princess Leia. And it was like, I just, the music comes on, dun, da, da, dun, da, da, dun, dun. And I just started hysterically crying. Like I couldn't even stop it. I was like, oh, because it's like thinking about my past and seeing that movie with my dad who's yeah. you know, mm-hmm. passed away a while, and all these moments come up and I'm crying. I'm not just crying because of the music or just because of the movie. It's all these other things that are kind of I'm tapped into. And my son, every time I'm about to cry, I think I just like, you get that hitch in your throat where you're like, you know, whatever. And my son every time is like, dad's about to cry. Dad's about to cry. And I'm like, and it's like this thing that like, it just, you're not walking around. You're not at a restaurant having a date. And you don't see people crying really ever. I mean, it's a very personal thing when you get emotional about something. And it is strange to discuss with other men, because when I was growing up, I mean, I never saw my father cry. You know, and the way I feel like when I've tapped into this breath work and I've had that experience that we've been talking about, where it just opens me up to this, whatever, you know, trauma is coming up, I feel so good afterwards. It's like, and it's incredible, like the stress relief and just feeling more connected with the moment, all that kind of stuff. It feels so good. Like, why would anyone have ever shamed me for crying? It's a weird thing.
Yeah,
there's an incredible documentary about that called The Mask We Live In, which is what we do to little boys oftentimes growing up, where we tell them like, oh, don't be a wimp, don't cry, be a man. Like, it's this thing that happens, and you know, it's sort of been passed down through generations, and it's starting to change, but you know,
I think that we're changing as a society. When my son had a pet, you know, early on when my son's pet died, it was like, you know, and I could tell he wanted to cry. And I'm just like, Julian, please cry. Like, it is so necessary when you're sad to cry. And he just let it out and I just held him. And my son cries he cries when he feels the need. And I feel like we're breaking that cycle, I hope. You know, the interesting thing you were sharing earlier, Josh, was just the idea that like you're going to save your energy for later on in the show. And I'm sure that I'm sure Glenn can talk to this as well. I found having Glenn on tour with me, I've had him on tour in England and I've had him on tour in Australia, is the more we train, the more during the day, the more energy I have during the show. And the other guys in my band would be like, no, I want to save my energy. But like, what have you found, Glenn, as far as like, you know, kind of energy and that sort of stuff?
Well, it's interesting. The first time I was on tour with Josh, I like kind of planned it all out and scheduled it all out. We'll do this on this day. And I looked at the days where they had days off and where they didn't have days off. And I was like, okay, on the days off, we can push it hard. We can train it whatever time you want. There's a lot of different things to think about as far as like, are you rested enough, getting sleep, that kind of thing. Because For you, Josh, you've got to be like at your peak and on it at 8:30, 9 p.m. every night. I put a lot of effort into it. In the first four, we trained.
Dropping me off.
What? We trained earlier.
I don't know what the fuck to do.
John I'm Paul.
So I'm so fucking fucked right now.
Oh. I love it.
John, you're still on.
You can hear me?
We can hear you. We can hear you now, buddy.
Dude, I need some breath work. I need some cold plunge. I mean, this fucking thing, man. It's never been this bad. Like, I had a class on Sunday at 200 people in the room, and it dropped me out. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I'm teaching. Like, it just keeps doing it. And, I try to tell people, like, I need the breath work more than anyone. That's why I fucking do it. Like, I'm the guy who needs it the most. Like, when I was in LA, I would drive to a class and I would take the 101 to the 405 to the fucking 10. And then I would get there and then I'd be like fighting with someone over a parking space to get to the class on time. And it would take like 2 hours to get to the class. And then I'd get in the room and I'd be like, I almost just choked a guy out in the parking lot, but don't worry, I'm going to put gratitude and love in your heart right now.
About the time of day of training on the road, just to go back to that, we were training earlier in the day. And then I was like, oh, I want you to let's see how we feel. But then, John, when I came on tour with you in England, you were training probably like an hour before you would go on stage. It's the total opposite. You were like, we'd get to the venue, box for like 30 minutes, and then like you'd be like on stage like within 45 minutes, an hour later. You used it to try and fire you up, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So then the second time I was out with Josh, we tried that approach of like training a little bit later. And I think that worked, right, Josh? The second time where we trained a little bit later. Oh, so I kind of just sleep and rest for most of the day on a show day and then train closer to show time to try and like kick everything into gear. I think that worked a little bit better.
Yeah. So we tried multiple things, and 9 p.m. I like to look at it as sort of midday for me, because I don't really want to play a show like feeling like it's the end of the day. So yeah, I think kind of like allowing myself to sort of like wake up and get through the day a little bit was super helpful. And John, you and I are a little bit different with that, I think. And we've kind of like had conversations about this, because I think that you do like to just kind of like get up and go.
My whole sleep schedule changed having kids, and I'm just up now. And now I love getting up early, but in the beginning I hated it. But for me, it's like my anxiety's worse right when I wake up. That's when it's the worst. And when I first get up, it's like I have to get into action immediately. But for me, I need to do it early. So when Glenn was on the road with me, I just needed to train. I needed to train early.
Mm, yeah.
I remember, because I'm the same as you, John. I'm like up and out like 5:30, 6 every day. I'm like, oh, I've got to be productive. I'm like kind of addicted to being productive. So then, Josh, when we're on the road, like we'd be waking up like 1-2 p.m. and I'd be like, wake up and I'd see the time, and for like the first 30 minutes of my day every day, I'm just like mega anxiety, like, oh my God, I've missed like this, I missed that. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I just woke up, you know, it takes a massive adjustment to get used to that feeling of being awake in the afternoon.
It's coming off stage. It's really hard to wind down after something like that, because it is a workout. You know, it's like a 2-hour workout. You're basically kind of just, you're thrown in a position that I feel like is pretty abnormal. I know that kind of coming off of that, I definitely need time to kind of just like cool down. And so I usually just go back to my dressing room with pretty dim lights, a candle, and then like some soft music playing, lay on the floor and kind of, I think implement a little bit of the breath work sometimes. And then, you know, gratitudes, which you've also introduced into my world. So yeah, and then you just kind of find yourself restless, and so then it just, and the kind of the longer you're on tour, it's just like that schedule just keeps like nudging itself over and over, To where, you know, like Glenn said, you find yourself sometimes waking up at 1 or 2, and then kind of getting started with whatever you need to do for the day, whether it's interviews or meet and greets, or then trying to fit training in there.
The adrenaline that you get, and there is some energy, and again, like, none of us are scientists as far as I know, but the energy that you get off people when they're singing lyrics back to you, or they're, you know, clapping and screaming, and like that energy that you get, you absorb that energy. And like, you know, we've done so many radio shows where it's been 50, 100,000 people. And it's like, at the end of that stuff, it really takes like some kind of spiritual toll on you, on everything, you know. Like I'm laying there in bed, and I'm the same thing, just staring at my bunk, and I sometimes just stay up all night till, you know, 9:10 the next morning before I can fall asleep, you know.
When Glenn's on the road with you, you're a guy who's running around stage and jumping up and down with a guitar and stage diving, and I'm just playing drums. And so, and but both of those things are definitely physical, but pretty different. And I think one of the most beneficial things of having Glenn around is realizing that there's not just sort of one formula to apply universally, but that he can kind of look at each person who, you know, on different levels of fitness. And I think that that's when I first started boxing, kind of what I was talking about, is it just felt like there was like a one formula that these other kind of boxing instructors or trainers would kind of throw at you. And it just kind of felt overwhelming and daunting. And it was just like, man, I don't think I'm where you think I am at, you know, a boxing level. And, you know,
there's almost like in fitness with trainers, there's a lot of ego involved, and it's like, I know what I'm doing, and I'm an expert at this thing, and I'm going to impart everything I know onto you, right? And you're going to do everything that I say, because this is all about me, and I'm the greatest trainer. And that ego and that attitude, it's like, I see it in the fitness industry so much, and it's just something that I just, you know, it's not me. It's like, to me, I'm the complete opposite. It's all about you guys and what you need to be best at doing, and how can I make that happen. And that goes for everybody I've ever worked with. It's like, I want them to be at their best, whether they're sat at a desk all day, like taking a million calls, whether they're playing in front of 100,000 people playing drums, like whatever you're doing, like I want you to be the best at that and feel like you're at your best. And to me, I just love that challenge of trying to figure that out. It's like, okay, well, what do we need to do to get you to that point? So I just love the challenge of it, and I just love the whole journey and the process of seeing people progress and enjoying it along the way. Like you said earlier, Josh, like the first time we boxed, I think you said, oh, this is fun. And that's always my mindset with every single session, is like, let's have a good time. If we're training for like 40 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour, whatever it is, it's like, my first priority for everybody is to just have a great time. Let's just have fun. And then the second priority is, it's got to be a great workout. And the third priority is like, we learn something or we progress along the way. So that's kind of like how I try to approach it. And I think a lot of trainers get that kind of priority list mixed up a little bit. It's like, oh, you're going to learn from me first, right? You know, whatever. But yeah, it's just, to me, it's all about fun. Like, training should be fun, or else you're not going to want to do it, you know?
Hit the bike. I remember the first time I was in the gym, you're like, go over there and hit the bike. I'm like, what are you talking about? The bike. Yeah, I'm one of the things I'm the most grateful for about Glenn is I can run again, because so much of the training is about strength and strength training. And when I used to just work out at the gym, I just worry about, like, you know, these guns here. And and it's like, when I'm with Glenn, he really, like, doing squats and, you know, split squats and just everything that we do, like, I'm able to run again, because I've had 4 surgeries on my knees, you know, like jumping around stage. I tore my ACL when we had Real Big Fish on tour with us. I mean, when I was on tour with No Doubt, I had had to have 2 surgeries on my knees from just damage I had done from tearing whatever that thing is. Is it the patella?
Patella tendon.
Yeah. I tore that twice. And so I had surgeries on that. And so I was, I could barely walk upstairs. And since I've been doing all this training with Glenn, I'm able to run again. I top out about 3 miles before it starts getting it, but I couldn't run at all. And so I'm so grateful that I'm able to run again. I remember the first time I posted that on my story, I was like on the beach. I'm like, dude, thank you, Glenn. This is awesome.
Yeah. That means so much to me that's happened. Like, you know, that was always my goal, is to like, look, you've had all these issues with your knees, but we can strengthen around that and you'll be able to use them again. Trust me, you can, you know, I think a lot of people think like, that once it's damaged or there's been surgery on it, that it's like, okay, can't do that again. It's like, well, if we take a smart approach to this and we can like build everything back up and we're doing things properly and moving your body the way it's supposed to, then, you know, we can get those things moving again.
And the thing about fitness itself, getting into it, is that I don't know if there's a world in which it's not uncomfortable in some ways, but I think that that's the point. And so I think about that sometimes on kind of those early mornings where it just feels like it's a little more challenging for me, but I think that the uncomfort of it has become, you know, in a weird way, a little bit of something that I look forward to, just because of, I just feel that much better afterward. So yeah, whether it's, you know, if it's early morning or if it's just something's difficult and, you know, we can all sort of tend to complain or feel upset about it, but ultimately it's just kind of like, that's sort of the point. And, yeah. And similarly, John, my back has hurt. My lower back has hurt since I was like 18. I think within the last 6 months, that's like pretty much completely gone away. And within kind of, you know, getting more advanced with fitness, you just kind of learn more. So I think just kind of like pulling from other areas and then doing things properly can really help with the longevity of our bodies.
What's up? I am Machine Gun Kelly, and look, I know Halloween is gonna suck this year because there's no trick-or-treating and all that, but I've got a treat. There's a musical podcast that I made with my friends 24K Golden, Ian Dior, and Dana Dentata, and Satan. Well, Satan's not my friend, but Tommy Lee is, and Tommy Lee is playing Satan. But don't just take it from me. Tell him, Satan.
Thanks, dude. It feels great to be playing Satan on this podcast. This Halloween, listen to Halloween in Hell on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or whatever you get your podcasts on. Soundtracks available on Spotify or wherever you stream your music. But I mean, like, everybody's got a podcast these days, but what would I know? I'm Satan, for God's sakes. Don't even get me started.
It's just, I love working with you guys because, like, I think the kind of way you do one thing is, I think you do most things in the same kind of way for the most part. I think most people operate like that. And you, every single training session, you guys like push yourself to your limit. You like, you're there like on time and just like, it's just, you know, reliable, and you work hard the entire session. There's never any like, oh, I don't want to do this today, or like, oh, I can't do that, or I can't do that. Oh, do we have to do it? It's not, none of that. It's just like, we're here, we're on time, we're going, we're training. That whole training session from start to finish, it's like all in, foot to the floor, like in a constructive way. And I think that just reflects in you, both of your careers, how successful you've both been too. It's like, because you're so driven and motivated to succeed, I feel like that is the way you are in training and fitness too. And I think that's across the board. It's a general pattern. It's like the people that I do work with that are successful in their careers and have gone on to do amazing things, they train their ass off. They're reliable. They're, you know, like they're all in. And the people that aren't kind of like that are the ones that are like kind of struggling or got issues in career or relationships or whatever. It's like just kind of a general pattern, you know? So I just love like the way you approach fitness and training too. And it's, you know, it's easy to see why you're both so successful at what you do. Good stuff, boys.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, how many computers has John Paul smashed at this point, do you think?
Oh, man.
Wait, where is he?
He's going to have to reset his whole. I think he's just done. I think he's over. Well, I'm really grateful for both of you, and I'm so thankful for your time on this call. I mean, this has been the most, I know it's been the most professional thing you've ever done in your career, Josh, ever, this call.
For sure. No, this is good. This is, I guess a final thought for me is that I do feel I've never been somebody that tries to like really push what I think or believe on people. And I think, especially when it comes to when you're talking about fitness or like diet, there, if somebody kind of like gets into something, then I feel like it's just, you don't hear the end of it from that person. So I've always tried really hard to organically share the benefits of it without kind of like slamming it over people's heads. And so I feel like, this is a great place to kind of just talk about the benefits and how it's improved our lives. And, you know, hopefully whoever's checking this out is genuinely interested and you can get started anywhere, whether it's just kind of like walking out your front door and taking a walk. I think that's like that can be the beginning of your fitness journey, or that could be the extent of it. But I think just getting movement going is key, and that's I've found that's really important for me. And I think that Glenn is just a wealth of information, a great trainer, but is also just knowledgeable and wise, and spends his time kind of researching.
You're a supplement nerd like me.
I think we could go on, you know, have a whole separate podcast on supplements,
totally.
But thank you, Glenn, and thanks, John, for getting me into it. And I think it's something that I that has changed my life, and I hope to never stop doing this. It's just something that's really beneficial in so many ways.
I admire that so much about you. You know, I'm such a sugar addict. I've got like, it's like since this COVID thing started, like I've not had the cleanest diet, and I've just watched you, you know, really clean your diet up almost like, I mean, in ways that I couldn't have imagined. And your whole kind of, I mean, it's just shaped, you know, who you are. I mean, really. And I train. I feel like I go as hard as I can, and I'm in the best shape I've ever been in my life. But I just, sugar for me is still a thing, you know. And it's so admirable how you treat your body like a temple. You know, it's amazing.
Well, thanks, man. I think I like watching back the videos of me and you training, you know, 3-4 years ago, and seeing the difference in form and technique. I think we look like we know what we're doing a little bit more than we did when we started. You continue to grow and you look great. And I think that could be even a third podcast on diet. But I do think that that's just adding to a whole lot of noise. But I think you do it great.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, and just to wrap up, I mean, we did start this podcast with the idea of the only real purpose of this was to try and help people. And I know a lot of, you know, like myself, I struggled a lot with depression and anxiety when I was a kid growing up. I mean, I really never felt like I fit in my own skin. And, you know, for me, breath work, meditation, diet, and exercise have been key. And more than anything, I mean, anything, exercise has been the thing that has really changed the trajectory of my mental health issues. And it's just like, I feel like since I've really started training hard with Glenn, I've been, it's really shifted that whole thing for me. And I'm just so grateful for both of you guys. I love you guys.
Right back at you, boys. Thanks for all the training and bringing me out on the road and training week in, week out, and all the good times we have in between. Yeah, good stuff. Appreciate it all. Good chatting.
Cool.
Thank you.
Woo! Guys. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 7 a.m.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.